Listen up, real estate investors, entrepreneurs, and agents. You're in the right place. Unlocking the secrets to real estate investing and entrepreneurship. Welcome to the Titanium Vault, hosted by RJ Bates III. Here's RJ.
Welcome to the Titanium Vault. Today we have Corey Thompson with us. Corey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are y'all?
So I've been looking forward to interviewing you on the podcast for a while. I know you've been on Propelio and you shared a lot about your story. But for the Titanium Vault listeners that don't know your background or your story or how you got started in real estate investing, why don't you go ahead and share that?
Well, I worked in the oil field for 15 years. So I was, I worked my way up from there. I started at the bottom, worked myself to the top of the food chain out there, I guess as far as I can make it without a college degree. In 2014, I never will forget it, it was Thanksgiving of 2014, OPEC had a meeting and said they weren't going to cut production to prop up oil prices. I think oil was in the $70 or $80 a barrel range then. And just every 2 weeks when I went back to work, you know, it was like there was a bunch of new faces. People were getting laid off. Made it all the way down to, I think there was 12 rigs left running or 7 rigs. I don't remember. And I kind of put in my request to be laid off. I was a little bit tired, a little bit burnt out. I'd given it my all. Had a new family. Had Emery. She was a year and a half old at the time or whatever. And was just kind of ready to go spend some time at home, and was tired of the politics of not getting laid off, I guess, is the way to do it. Could no longer perform your job at the level that I wanted to perform my job at. I couldn't, you know, every decision was being second-guessed. And, I've always been really a decision maker, good or bad, and just kind of live with it. So got laid off. Was at home for a little bit there and, kind of weighing my options with what to do with my young family. And a friend of mine reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I'm looking at buying some rent houses. I've been looking into this. I'm an Aggie fan. There's a website called texags.com. He had found a guy on there. And they hosted a meetup. I didn't know what meetup was, but he said, hey, why don't you come down here and meet me at this thing and, you know, get out of the house. I was depressed one time, kind of about my overall situation. So just getting off the couch and into that helped me out a lot. So went there, got everything set up. And once I got set up, we learned about hard money lending that night. And the next week, I think, went to a tax auction and bought 3 properties, not at the auction, but through that avenue. Found 2 of them from another investor there that was just, I talked to anybody, and another one we found on Craigslist, and, you know, that was it. We were into real estate investing. So it's kind of an interesting story, but the backstory before that is way more interesting than the actual getting into that. Like, everything leading up to that point is a much better story.
So you buy those 3 properties. What did you plan on doing with those? Were those rehabs, rentals, owner finance, wholesales? What were you doing?
I got laid off from I was making $25,000 a month salary, and I could work over a little bit, and I averaged about $30,000 a month for 12 months. That was what my salary was. So I went into real estate. He wanted to buy rentals. He understood the value of that at the time. He understood money. He had invested in the stock market and done different things. I knew nothing about that. Like, didn't have any understanding of that side, you know, of money or any of that. Like, my understanding of money was work, get paid, spend it, work, get paid, spend it, work, get paid, spend it, which is a great, I mean, I was making more money than I could spend, so I was happy, you know, I was gaining on it. But I had a $30,000 a month void in my life, so I was a straight flipper. But Jacob, you know, was obviously wanting to get a rental portfolio. So, we had we didn't know what we were doing. I didn't know what a CMA was. Emery's about to come join. I didn't know what a CMA was. I didn't know what comps were. I didn't know what ARV was. I didn't know anything. Like, the only thing I knew was I had a friend in town that Emery's about to just like crash this party.
That's okay,
baby. You got to stay back there or be very quiet. So anyways, I didn't know what ARV was. I didn't know what a comp was. I didn't know anything. All I knew was if I looked at it on the tax roll, there was a value on there. And the way it worked in our county was those values were lower than what you could actually sell it for. So, based on that information, that's what we were buying off of. And my friend Brandon had sold a house once. He's the only friend of mine that, at this point in time, you're 20, 30, we're right at 30 years old, 31, something like that. So you don't have very many friends that have bought and sold a house. You know what I mean? Like, some of them have bought a house, but they never sold one. So you don't know anything about that. I'm just like, well, if Brandon bought that one piece of shit on the other side of town and was able to sell it for 75, then we should be able to get 75 for all of this. And that was literally how we ran comps. Like, if we can make 75 on this, heck, we're good. So that's how we started that. And not traditional. Emery, baby, no ma'am, please, no. So anyways, that's kind of how we got started. I mean, not kind of, that is how we got started. We did not have a real good education or a real good idea. We had some $12,000 houses, some $20,000 houses, and took a contractor in there, and he said, yeah, $10,000, I'll get this thing going for you. I think the second bid was like $18,000 or something for a different house. And, we're just putting it together and saying, hey, I think we'll make a little bit of money here. And that was it. I mean, we took off and did it. So
were you successful with those deals?
Okay. Yeah. Very first one we bought, May 7th of 2015, was our first closing date on a property. We closed on that property for $12,000. We put $10,000 into it. Just through Facebook, just talking on Facebook. At the time, I did not have any business people on Facebook, none whatsoever. Like, no other investors, no Grant Cardone, no Gary V, no nothing. Just my old hood rat friends from high school. That was it. So, but I knew what the swap and shops were. Got some pretty funny stories about swap and shop courage. But I knew what the swapping shops were, so from that side of things, I knew what to do there. Like, you know what I mean? So I went into the swap shop, and I was like, hey, we're going to have this house. We're remodeling it. Check us out. Like, we didn't have a business. We didn't set up an LLC. We're doing this in our personal name. But I'm going to be selling this at some point in time in the future. So if you want to buy it, the time is now. And the most unlikely family on earth showed up. They worked at Whataburger and HEB. We're talking – now I got poor network connection on Skype. But anyways, they worked at HEB and Whataburger. Rolled up to this house before we got the remodel done. Said, we got $25,000 down. Would you owner finance it? And we bought it for $12,000 and we put $10,000 in it. So didn't know what under financing was, but understood that we were going to have our money back and collect a payment. So we ended up owner financing that for $47,000. We make $216 a month right now to this day off that property. That was our very first actual full turnaround. The second one that we actually sold was in Granbury, Texas, which is 2.5 hours away. No guru is telling you take on a flip 2.5 hours away. Call up a contractor, a bootleg contractor. I went to a Emery's trying to edit out some stuff. Anyways, went to a bootleg carpet store, walked in there, was like, hey, I need a bid on some flooring. And the guy's like, well, where's the house at? I'm like, it's right over here. And so he shows up. He's like, I got a homeboy that can do this whole job. Like, call up the homeboy. So the homeboy comes out. He's like, yeah, I'll do it for 18. And anyways, like, all right, here's 10 grand, go to work. And that one we actually made 17,000 on, but knowing what we know now, we could have just gotten robbed blind. We didn't have a contract. We didn't have anything. We didn't have a scope of work. It's just like what this is now. We don't like the floors. Obviously, we went into a flooring store. I don't know what's going on with this ceiling here. It looks a little fucked up. And the roof is bad, you know? So why don't you fix some of that? But he put in a new kitchen. He did all kinds of stuff. And we made $17,000 on that one. So at that point, we're real estate geniuses and we're selling education. You know what I mean? It's like, but I mean, honestly, at that point, we still didn't know what a wholesaler was. We didn't know what any of that stuff. We had no idea. Like, you know, we didn't know that there was a whole different side of the business. We didn't know there's like this whole black market of real estate investing or whatever you want to call it. Knew none of that. We just knew one thing. Corey's laid off and needs $30,000 a month. And we're finding out real slow that on flips, if everything goes perfect, it's a 90-day turnaround. You know what I mean? So there's in between the time that between we put all of our money, literally every dime we had into real estate and figuring that out, it was like there was some really trying moments in time where it was like, you know, if this business is going to work, I've got to change my lifestyle completely or go back to work. You know what I mean? Like, because these are the options. I'm not going to replace a $30,000 a month income flipping houses because I don't have the capital. I don't have the access to capital. You know what I mean? All the money I have, when I put it all in, to by the time it turns back around, my credit card bills are so high because I'm, you know, eating $30 steaks and doing all this and, you know, still living, still doing all that. Everything that I'm doing from that side of things is not sustainable. If you're going to be a real estate investor, you've got to really evaluate that situation. So, you know, now wholesaling is a different deal altogether. If you've got the skill set to wholesale, you can live a lifestyle. You can do what you need to do in that manner. But if you don't, and at this point, we still didn't know what wholesaling was. We didn't even know we could sell a contract like that. Then you can't sustain. So I had to make some life choices and sell my personal house, sell my land. I had a property on 32 acres that we owned outright, sold it, and generate that capital that we needed to be able to do more deals, and had to take, you know, start using hard money, start learning how to leverage, but did not read a book on any of that, did not have an understanding on any of that, you know, just did it by trial and error. And when you're out taking that much action, guys like you, well, not at that point in time, not you, but other investors, they take notice and they're like, hey, this, you know, this guy has no idea what he's doing. Somehow he's in business. You know what I mean? So I need to get around him and ask him some questions, which I always thought was kind of funny. You know, when I crossed paths with Donnie Ruffin, he hadn't wholesaled a property yet. I don't believe. Actually, when we first talked on the phone, I know he hadn't. So by the time I bought one from him, I think he had sold a few, but I know I bought Prince Partridge first wholesale deal. But we were all at the same point in our real estate investing career. Emery, baby, come on. We were all at the same point in our career at that time. We had all maybe done one or two deals, you know what I mean? All trying to figure it out, but all ended up in the same place. You know what I mean? Right. So whenever I look over now and I see Prince is a, you know, I mean, he might be a broker by now, but he's a licensed agent. Emery. Baby, come on. So anyways, but whenever I look at that, I'm about to hand her this phone. Baby, come here. Come here. You got a pacifier for
me. And for everybody that's listening, Donovan Ruffin has been a guest on the podcast before, and he shared his story, and it is an incredible story. So if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Prince and Donovan were partners when they got started, correct?
Right. So Prince showed Donovan the check that he got from us from wholesaling, a $20,000 check, which we all missed on that deal. Come here. We all, you know, go back to your room. We all missed on that, like every one of us. That deal was worth $121,000 ARV. That's when I learned what a CMA was, when the hard money lender asked us to get a CMA. Got a CMA. CMA was for $121,000. Okay, missed that. Did not know how to read a CMA, so I didn't know we had a property that was worth $121,000. We're buying it from Prince for $40,000. He was assigning it to us for $20,000, so he's making $20,000 for assigning a contract. It's worth $121,000. We had a $27,000 bid for rehab, and turned it down and listed it for $85,000 because that's what the realtor said to do. So we listed it for $85,000. We got a $70-something thousand dollar offer. We ended up making $27,000 on that deal. But we left a lot of money on the table because we did not know how to read a CMA, didn't know what it was or anything. But we were able to execute our first hard money loan and turn it around, which one, showed our lender that we were capable, and two, you know, showed us ourselves that we were capable. So then we started actually using hard money more in our business. And right now, currently, I don't know if I should say this with all the lenders that we have, but right now, currently, we're sitting at about $1.9 million in hard money loans that we're servicing right now, we're getting bank loans. So that's, you know, as I sit here and talk on this podcast, we're accruing, $20,000 worth of interest a month that we're paying just interest only, which sounds insane to people. But, I mean, that's where our business has grown in 3 years. So, you know, 3 years ago, didn't know how to borrow $40,000 on hard money. In 3 years' time of taking action, not only do we have, you know, enough financial backing to be able to get access to a couple million dollars with the hard money, but we got it deployed. I mean, we got a $460,000 hard money loan that we're taking to buy a park in Canyon, Texas, which is up by Amarillo. That's just going to add to that. We are refining on the bank loans. We closed on the 23rd, so we'll take $250,000 off of that book. You know, it'll be a bank loan then. So, I mean, we're always putting it on a bank loan, but now we've grown our business so big that we have a bank that is down to ride with us. We have they'll cash us out within a few months. We have another bank that'll cash us out in a year. So we're getting so big now that we're having to call the banks up that'll cash us out in a year and say, okay, let's move some of this debt from bank A to bank B. So it's kind of just an acquisition like train, take it down with hard, take it out with a bank loan, and then take it out with another bank loan in a year. That way all of our lenders feel good. You know what I mean? Like, well, we don't owe any one bank, $1 million, but my goal this year is to get, and I think we're going to fall well short of it, but you got to have that massive goal to be able to take enough action to get there. So my goal was take on $25 million in debt this year, not me personally, but from the companies that we have. And, we're walking along, man. We're making it happen at the best, not the best of our ability. I don't want to say we're doing our best, but we're doing enough, but we're learning the entire time too. You know what I mean? None of us have been down this trail, so we don't know, and we don't even know who to ask, because nobody has came from so much nothing, to that level yet. I mean, everybody, it's like if somebody's at that level, they had a, big head start. Heck, I had 2 million liquid. We didn't have 2 million liquid. You know what I mean? We had 250,000 liquid when we started, and we've grown it into this.
So you bring up coming from nothing. I don't think I've ever shared this story with anybody outside of people that know me personally. But the first house that I ever flipped, bought it from a wholesaler. The wholesaler was an agent, told me he would list it on the back end for 1%. So we put it on the market, we get an offer, we accept it, and then I get the settlement statement, and I see that there's 4% real estate agent fees. And I throw a big old fit. I'm kicking and screaming, and I'm like, dude, you told me you would sell this for 1%. And that's how ignorant I was. I didn't realize that I had to pay the buyer's agent 3%. And I was dead set on, no, you told me 1%. You lied to me. And it is funny to look back at like the humble beginnings and how little information we might actually know when we get started. But I think you and I are very similar in the fact that we've been able to utilize the resources that are out there and available through, social media or the sites like Flip Nerd or Bigger Pockets. Propelio TV is a huge asset for newer investors now, or even experienced investors. I mean, they get on there and they're giving valuable information. One of the things that everybody wants to know about is your involvement with mobile home parks. How did you get started in that? And really try to break that down for people.
Okay. So with that, I got started in mobile home parks by accident. I had a friend's I don't even remember how I got my first mobile home park lead, honestly. I'm trying to rack my brain. I've known the guy forever. I think I called him to buy a lot, a mobile home that we had bought for like, it was on a lot. We actually bought the lot because it could take two mobile homes. And we kept getting mobile home leads, so we wanted a place that we could actually put them, but it had a shit mobile home on it. And so somehow I think I'd figured out that this guy was managing some mobile homes in that town. So I'd called him and kind of told him what I had going on. And he said, look, I've got this mobile home park out here. It's on 23 acres. And, you know, if you want to sell it, I'll sell it for, he said, like $500,000 or something. And so just hearing it, you know, hearing the upfront numbers, you hear $500,000 and 23 acres, and it's got a house. I think it had nine mobile homes and a brick house on it. I was like, man, this sounds like a deal, you know what I mean? But I got to the property. You know, it didn't take me long to realize that there was room for growth, all of that, but we didn't know how to do any of that. We didn't know how to buy a mobile home. We didn't know how to title a mobile home. We didn't know any of that stuff. So it was like, you know, and as always, we were broke, you know, for lack of a better word. I mean, we always run with reserves. So when I say broke, I just mean, you know, we're just broke. Like we don't have money to invest. We have money we need to, you know, change out the air conditioning unit, replace the roof, but we don't have money to invest. So we had to find some guys to ride with us on this one. And we had done some deals with two gentlemen, Stuart Miller and Tyler Albertson, and they enjoy what we brought to the table. We would, you know, they would bring different elements to the table, and we would go do the work, and they liked that about us. So with that, we jumped in. We jumped all in on it, called them up. They said, yeah, we'll do it with you. And we started negotiating with the seller. So eventually get the seller down to $350,000 on purchase price. We get one of our hard money lenders to take a $100,000 second lien position, give him $100,000 down, and get him to hold the $250 interest only, and use all of our capital that, you know, both those partners had, which is $100,000, and bring the park up to code, get all the mobile homes in there that we could. So we started buying mobile homes for, you know, I think we paid $8,000 for the cheapest, $20,000 for the most expensive. And we put in six more mobiles, I believe it was. We got 16 out there now, so it's nine originally. All right, so seven homes. Skirt them up, plumb them in, get them all hooked up and rented. And at that point in time, from what we understood about cap rates, we figured everything on a 12 cap. And if we got it on 12 cap, then when we went to the bank to refi, we wouldn't have any money in it. And what we found out was, one, you need to season a little better and keep a little better records when it comes to income. Like, if we would have held that park full for three full months, so if we'd have had all 16 mobiles rented for three full months, then we would have got full income credit for everything that was rented in the park, right? So since we didn't get all of our income that we made, we didn't get credit for it. Another thing was, you need to capture more things that are in the onboarding, not as expenses. So if you skirt a house or you do something like that, that's part of the onboarding process, not part of, you know, general maintenance. So that doesn't come out of expenses. It's actually an inventory. It's in the purchase. So it's just ways you keep your books to where when you turn them into the bank and the appraiser and they look at it and they say, oh, okay, you know, they don't ding you for work that you're doing to bring the property up. It would be like, I don't really know how to explain it on a single family home, but you know, when skirting and plumbing and all of that is basically part of the purchase of that property, of that house, not part of the expenses of running the park. Okay, so all that being said, we learned how to clean our books up a little bit, but we still got a $690,000 appraisal on that property, which means that we were able to borrow $550,000, $550,000, $570,000. I don't remember, but whatever it was, we borrowed all of our money back out of it. Got every dime that we had in the park back out, I think, plus an extra $30,000. So we picked up an extra $30,000 from the bank, which we weren't expecting. We didn't know that because they evaluated it at a 9 cap. So what we thought was we had more income. You know what I mean? We found out real quick we didn't. And then, but it kind of made up with it for getting a lower cap rate. So if they would have done it at a 12 cap, you know, and gave us credit for all our income, we'd have came out basically just the same. But since they didn't get credit for all of our income and raise at a 9 cap, we could actually, right now, if we went, when we go back, if we wanted to pull equity out of that park, we could pull another couple hundred thousand in equity out on a refi, because now we know mobile home parks sell at a 9 cap versus a 12 cap. Just, and you might want to, you know, if you want me to explain cap rates a little better, let me know. I don't know that I can break it down.
Actually, my question is how did you figure out about the books? Was it the bank that explained it to you? Was it the appraisers? Or did you have to go to an outside source to figure out how to keep those better books and where the expenses compare? Like, how did you figure out what you just explained?
Well, okay, so with that, we figured that out because when we got the appraisal, we seen what they discounted. You know what I mean?
Right.
We seen how much income we got credit for. Jacob keeps the books. Jacob is a bookkeeper, and I think honestly, you talk to a CPA. You don't want to ever get into a situation where you're committing mortgage fraud. You know what I mean? So you want to reach out to a CPA and say, you know, how do I do this? So I think he talked to the CPA, and I think, you know, he looked at it. And then a conversation that we had with Dave Hill, I had a phone conversation with him, and he kind of, I mean, he spit a bunch of terminology at me real fast. But basically he explained, you know, that what you want to do on these refis with the equity, if you want to leave it in the property where it's safe. In other words, if I have $500,000 in equity and I can access $250,000 of it, you want to access that $250,000 at the beginning. Later on, once you have your reserves built up, then you want to leave it in. So through that conversation, whenever I talked to Jacob, you know, he had already talked to the CPA. He had already seen what the appraisal was, and he's like, "Well, you know, it makes sense because a lot of this I was billing as expenses when it really wasn't expenses. It was part of onboarding, which is basically part of the purchase." You know, and so from that conversation with the CPA and everything else, and a conversation with Dave, we kind of pieced it all together and figured out, you know, if you replace an air conditioning in a unit that fails, you know, obviously that's an expense. But if you're putting skirting and plumbing and all of that into a property during the onboarding process, that's more part of the purchase than it is an expense. You know, you're not going to be skirting a house every month. You know what I mean? It's just
right.
You know, it's not – skirting doesn't fail, especially not metal. We use steels that they do roofs with for our skirting. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you don't want to – you want to do what the professionals tell you to do. So it's, you know, questions that he had with the CPA, you know, once he analyzed that I think the appraisal was 140 pages long. But when you saw where they allocated expenses, then it was like, okay, you know, is this really an expense? You know, but it's. I mean, it's probably a Dropbox on QuickBooks. Honestly, I don't really know. I don't do that side of things. So,
right.
But I mean, it's probably as simple as that. Like when you clean your books up, but when you get efficient at these things, and that's why, you know, when people ask me questions about this, I think I get you know a lot of the credit for being the figurehead of a phenomenal company, but. You know, when it comes to doing things, I go do things, but I have very little to do with our borrowing power. You know what I mean? Matter of fact, right. I have nothing to do with our borrowing power. Like I don't think a bank ever considers anything Corey Thompson does when they're loaning money. You know what I mean? They look at Jacob's credit, they look at Stewart's credit, they look at Tyler's credit, they look at the income of the companies that we're bringing, they look at our W-2 partners that Tyler is, you know, pulled in. And they say, man, we'll loan you some more money. Go get us something else. You know what I mean? As far as the back end, you know, I think every now and then maybe, you know, who's doing this? And they're like, well, look at this guy on Facebook. Just, you know, earmuff it for us because it'll be, you know, he's going to cuss and shit. But, you know, he's out doing the work. So, you know, that's, I think, you know, I think it's unfair. But, you know, back to cap rates. I really want to elaborate on cap rates because I think that's the huge missing piece for people on this. You know, Jamie Waite is a guy that's loosely in the investor group in DFW, but he owns an air conditioning company, right? And he's one of those first people back in 2015, you know, you kind of run into guys, you know, you got Dale Childress Jr. Found all these guys on Grant Cardone Facebook Lives, as a matter of fact. You know, Ron Papke, you know, Lee Height, like all these different people that I started following that's mindset, you know what I mean, that anything's possible, set big goals, like all of that. Well, applying their own lessons and what they're saying to my own life, I'm listening to Jamie Waite, and he says, I have one negotiation with one seller, and I'm able to extract all this value. Well, at that point in time, I would always think of equity the same way. Equity plus a dollar and you could get a Coke is what I'd always say. You know what I mean? What do I care about equity? I don't give eight shits about equity. But the truth of the matter is, if I know how a bank evaluates a mobile home park, right? And mobile home parks are an endangered species. Cities are fighting us. I'm in a fight with the city right now because they don't want us to move mobile homes in, but the state law has prevented them from being able to do anything about it. So they are making our life a living hell on getting water and getting this and getting that, and they're not even following Texas property code to do it. They're just being dicks about it, right? So we're in that battle, and that's the negative side of it. But the positive side of it is we bought that mobile home park for $100,000, okay? If we took it at a 9 cap right now, if we took it just how it sits at a 9 cap to the bank, we could borrow $325,000 against that property. So we could buy it day one for $100,000. Day two, we could borrow $325,000 against it just from knowing how to keep the books, just from knowing what cap rates are, just from understanding income. So now I got an endangered species that there's going to be less of every year because they're not making anymore. So that means supply is going down. Demand for affordable housing is through the roof. We got some junk in Fort Worth. I mean, bought absolute junk. Like, Ryan Jackson's over there, oh, I got this Denton shithole. Fuck that. I want everybody to come on a tour to our Fort Worth mobile home park that we bought. We bought it on the numbers alone. We did not evaluate what was actually there for mobile homes. But the population is so dense around there. We put out a mobile home for $650 a month, okay? We can all go walk this thing together right now. It is terrible. I mean, it's 12 foot wide. My fat ass has to turn sideways to get down the hallway. It is something that reminds me of my childhood because I lived in this shit because my dad worked in the oil fields. So we went around. So I've lived in it. Like, I'm not renting something I haven't lived in. But we put this thing on the internet, and it got roasted. I mean, I put it on Facebook, and anybody that's seen me do Facebook battle, like I do Facebook battles on my business page too. So they're like, is that, you know, I mean, they're just, I'm like, dude, tag your crackhead cousin in this. Like, that's who we're trying to rent to. But we put it out at $650 a month, which was $150 higher than what the previous owner was getting for rent, okay? $150 higher, which at a 9 cap, if you just raise every rent in the whole park, if you get an extra, you know, $10,000 a year, that's extra $100,000 in value, right? So anyways, we raise rent $150 a month. We had we have 202 applications, 202 inquiries about it. And these are people that have gone up and looked through the window, the blinds are open, hell, the doors might be unlocked. These are people that have actually walked the property, seen their crackhead neighbor, and been like, nope, I still want it, bro. I still want it because it's affordable. And we actually have that unit rented. We rented it just as it sits. Like right now, we told them we're going to put new countertops in because it needs new countertops. So we're going to put $110 for Micah countertop in. You know, I have $500 in a rehab, rent it for $650 a month. And we're raising rent the whole park, but we're all going to put in four new trailers and we're going to do some different things. But all that being said, on a cap rate, on a commercial investment, from what I learned from Jamie, was this. So $150 a month, 15 units there. If I raise that value, I just added like $200,000 in equity to that property in one move. You know what I mean? In one move, $200,000 in equity. Not only that, I bought it, the price point we bought it at, and we actually bought that from a wholesaler, paid him a $40,000 assignment fee. We bought that property with it already had like $400,000 in equity from the minute we bought it. So he undervalued it so much, he didn't know what to do with it. He looked at it for what it is, right? It's a bunch of junky-ass mobile homes, but an appraiser does not care. When they go to it, they're looking at the income. They're looking at everything that it could be. You know what I mean? we're doing one down by Houston, refinance right now. The appraiser that come out told us our rent was way low, like $100 a month low. But we're not messing with that park because those tenants have been there for 10 years. You know what I mean? We bought that park with $500,000 in equity. You know what I mean? We don't need to do a value add at this moment to get money for our reserves. So on the park in Houston, which I'm kind of jumping back and forth now, but on the park in Houston, we're doing a $200,000 equity pull on the refi. On this park in Fort Worth, we'll probably do a $100,000 equity pull on the refi. We'll probably pull $100,000 in equity out for our reserves. But our biggest park yet is one that we're doing in Canyon, Texas, that we'll be closing on. That it's going to be, I mean, that deal, I can't believe how good of a deal that is. But we'll be closing on it at the end of the month. And then, of course, we did the one in Pecos, but Pecos is an oilfield town, so I don't give it the credit that it deserved, but we are renting one room and a two-bedroom mobile home park right now. One room is renting for $1,000 a month. So we bought that park for $420,000. We got 17 rooms there. We're getting $1,000 a month, and we're swapping it to Airbnb. This morning we got an offer from a company, rent one room on Airbnb, pay 6 months in advance for $2,000 a month for one bedroom. So These are things that when you understand how a bank values the property, now you can play in that space. So what Jamie said, you know, coupled with what Daniel Chad Moore from Propelio said about wishing he'd done bigger deals sooner is kind of the reason why we took the plunge into mobile home parks. And then it's just a space that if you don't mind dealing, I'm not a crackhead myself, but you know, those are my people. Like, I mean, Crystal Metheny, like, she lives next door. I'm in Groesbeck. You know what I mean? Like, I get these people. Like, these low budget rent, this class of tenant, I get them. You know what I mean? So it's not, right. It's not this big scary boogeyman of they can't pay rent. Like, that is bullshit. These motherfuckers do not want you coming around their place because they are kind of tweaky. You know what I mean? So they, you know, we don't rent to a bunch of drug heads. I don't want to misconstrue that. They're just a hardier people. You know what I mean? It's like when right. You're dealing with the bottom budget rental, good tenants that have stable income, that will pay their rent, that just don't want, that can't afford, you know, $8,000-$9,000 a month, 3-2 houses. You know what I mean? They got to have that $600 to $800 a month rent. And you know, a lot of value there. I mean, we were renting 4-bedroom, 2-baths for $800 a month. You know what I mean? A family that needs that. You know what I mean? They have those kids.
Right.
They have, you know, that need. They need that price point. And we can supply that in spades and make a pile of cash where other people are, you know, renting those, you know, renting, you know, I don't even know. I don't play in that area. You know what I mean? But got a 2-bedroom duplex that they're renting for $1,500 a month. Well, in a down economy, that might still be a deal, but those rents will have to soften. Our rents will not have to soften. Like, in a down economy, that just means more people need $800 a month, 4-bedroom, 2-baths. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I got it. Like, my rent might actually go up in a bad economy. So
right.
That's the way I look at it. And you know, people don't want to deal with that, great, more for me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll play in that space all day long.
So I want to ask you, you know, all of this is, it's a unknown territory for me. I'll be honest with you. I want to get into it. I want to learn more from you. So I appreciate you sharing what you do. If you guys are not part of the Facebook group, Roughneck to Real Estate, please join that. Corey gets on there. Probably multiple times a day, does Facebook Lives, shares how he's analyzing deals. He even calls sellers. Like, he'll do Facebook Live videos while he's calling sellers. It's amazing. So I appreciate that. But what I want to ask you is what are your goals for your company and for yourself? Like, what is the direction that you guys want to head, and where do y'all want to take this?
Goals, 1,000 doors for this year is a goal that I put out. Put that goal out because there's a lot of unanswered questions. So if you put out a little bitty goal, like a little bitty tiny goal, and you say I'm going to meet this goal, right? Like I'm going to meet a goal of I'm going to buy 5 duplexes this year, okay? and it, you already know how to buy five duplexes, right? I mean, what did you learn from that goal? You set a goal that you know you can attain. If you say I'm going to buy 500 duplexes this year, you're going to have to go learn some new shit. Like, you're going to have to ask questions that you wouldn't have to ask to buy five. You know how to buy five. You don't know how to buy 500. You don't know the level of, you don't know what the lenders are looking at that level. You don't know what the hard money lenders are looking at that level. You don't know what your partners are going to expect at that level. You don't know how to manage, 500 duplexes. You don't know the Appfolio exists. We just learned that this year. Appfolio is, the things you can do with Appfolio. So you're not even asking those questions. You're not looking for answers to, you're not trying to solve the problems that you're going to have at 500 doors when you're only trying to buy five, right? When you're trying to buy five, I know I can handle managing five doors. I know I can handle managing 20 doors. So I'm going to set my goal there. I don't want to do something I know how to do. I want to set a goal that is so massive, so big, that my partners look at me like I'm crazy, okay, which is motivation for me, because every time they're like, this seems a little bit scary, I know I'm moving in the right direction. You know what I mean? Like, when I bring up something to everybody, they kind of know now, because we work together so much, they're kind of like, it's kind of like we just got to exhale, because Corey's about to go for this, right? Like, he's going, when I get on the phone, like I looked at King, and I'm up in Amarillo, I'm looking at King, and I call, it's like the same phone calls every time. It's like I call the partners, I just start dialing down the list, and it's just 800 miles an hour of words, just we're about to do this shit right now. You know what I mean? Like, this deal's a home run. And then they look at the facts, they're like, well, can we at least figure out what the income is on it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But I just talked to the tenants, so they're paying this.
Right.
And they're like, well, get this information for us. I'm like, okay. So then we get the information in, and they're like, do you know that most of those trailers were built in the 60s? And I'm like, I don't care. Like, what do I care? Like, that 1960 model piece of shit is renting for $625 a month. You know what I mean? Like, I called a house in the neighborhood that's a 3-2 that had, it was just the biggest pile of shit you could ever look at, and it's renting for $1,000 a month. Like, the rents are low in this place, and we got to go after it. Like, we got to go. And then, all of a sudden, they'll start looking at it, and, they start doing some evaluating, and then they pick up the phone, and they call housing, and they realize, holy shit, we can get $1,100 a month for a 3-2, from housing. And it's like, Corey's on to something here. You know what I mean? Like we've got to go figure this out. And that's, but I know that when they first get that call, they just kind of exhale for a minute. Fort Worth, for example, it's the biggest piece of shit on earth. But they didn't look at it until like 2 weeks before closing, and then they're looking at it going, we are not really about to buy this. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to buy this. You know what I mean? Like, and they're like, dude, like, nobody's going to rent that for $650. I'm like, bro, everybody's going to pay $650. Everybody. $650 is like, if you need $500 a month rent, you're going to live on a bridge, bro. Like, $650 is it. Like, these people are they're going to pay it. And so anyways, they're like, and I'm like, nah, don't worry about it. And then, but during those conversations, I'm sitting here on the backside of it. I'm like thinking, man, I hope I'm right about this $650 thing. Like,
right.
When I talk to them, I'm like, look, it don't matter. Even if it rents for what it's renting for today, there's equity there. So what does it matter? You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, if it still only goes for $500 a month, there's equity there. If we have to put in brand new trailers, there's equity there. There's, it's like all of these problems, our bottom end is still covered. So, but we closed on it, and then we go out there and we meet the people that are there, and they're not the best people, and it becomes a lot of work. All of a sudden, we're going to have to kick a lot of these people out because we don't want them here, but I don't care, baby. Hang up on them. And so, anyways, so that.
Well, real quick, I want to interject.
It's like, you want to second guess yourself. You want to believe, but then you introduce it to the market, and it not only goes for $650 a month, but goes in like record, and then it's all of a sudden like, holy crap, do we have our rent a little low? You know what I mean? Can we get 700?
Right.
So these are things that from the partner side of things, they like, they're like, oh, you know, Corey's, this is bad. You know what I mean? Like, can we distract him? Like, send him fishing. Can we get him to go hunting? You know, what do him and Emery want to go do? Let's just steer him away from this deal. But at the end of the day, they're all down the ride. You know what I mean? It's like, look, if we're going to go do it, like we're going to have to, it's investing. You know what I mean? There's risk. So
right.
let's go take the risk and let's go take the plunge and let's see what's on the other side.
Well, it's funny you brought up how you come up with your goals. Like every year I come up with, you know, our company goals and my personal goals. And whenever I come up with them, it's basically like, what do I know I can accomplish? Which is pretty much what you just accomplished the year before. And then I always try to make the goal right to the point where it's so scary that I'm like, I feel like I'm going to fail. Like, I'm not going to be able to accomplish that. That's pretty much how I've always come up with our company goals and for my personal goals. And so I thought it was funny when you were talking about, you know, the duplex analogy, where it's like, can I buy 5 duplexes? Well, yeah, that's pretty simple. But can I buy 500? Now, if I try to buy 500, all of a sudden I'm going to have to learn something. And you're really pushing yourself to a whole nother level. So anyways, man, I do have to wrap this up. I know you're bringing a ton of great content. And we were joking yesterday, and I said, I think this is probably going to be the interview that I taught the least amount. And you achieved that, man. I'm pretty sure I only got like 37 seconds of talk time in here. So I appreciate that. This is the easiest interview I've ever done.
You know what I want to do? I just want to like have a Joe Rogan Facebook Live. I've never watched the Joe Rogan podcast, but the other day I drove 14 hours when I went to Canyon. So I drove up from Pecos to Canyon, and then I drove back down to College Station. And anyways, I busted out Joe Rogan. I was like, man, Joe Rogan, like, this dude, like, what does he talk to Dan Brazilian about for 3 hours? I listened to his Gary Vaynerchuk one, and then I started the Dan Brazilian one, but I'm like, what can Dan Brazilian and Joe Rogan talk about for 3 hours? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But that I want to do that one day, because I think on the backside of this, I think what we as – I don't even say seasoned investors, just there's levels to this shit, right? So you start and then you work your way up and you figure out something new, and it's like the more you go down this rabbit hole of knowledge, like you're always learning something new. And you're stepping up to the next level, and there's somebody above you reaching down to pull you up, and then you're reaching back to pull somebody else up, and you know, sharing your own knowledge. And that's the difference between scarcity and abundance, which is something that people, I don't think, grasp. Like, if you live in abundance, how much, like, if you don't treat every deal like it's got to go through and it's going to be your last deal, or you know, if you just drop that mindset of scarcity and just open your eyes to what's out there, you'll grow so much faster. I want to get on a 3 hour spill on mindset, like, because I think it's the most important thing. Like, to hell with cap rates, mobile home parks, and knowledge that you can get from the internet. If you don't believe in yourself first, if you don't believe that you can, which I'm blessed with in spades, like, you know, when my skills meet that level, like, I will go for it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't sit around in inaction. I might actually take the plunge a little too soon.
I'm glad you bring that up, because we just had someone on the Facebook Live say, I love the goals talk. I need more of that. So my challenge to anyone that's listening to this right now, if you don't have goals for yourself for this year, for this month, for this week, for each day, you need to start doing that. It's very simple. For me, I like things to be nice and pretty and look a certain way, so I use Canva.com. I make it look nice and pretty. This year, I shared it on my personal Facebook page so everybody in the world can see them. And come January 1 of 2019, y'all can all hold me accountable to it. And I'm going to share my results and see how I did. But I have a goal, like one very simple goal for our company this year is to wholesale 2 properties a week. That would be 104 deals. Every day that goes by, when I'm driving home, I'm thinking to myself, what did I do today to wholesale 2 properties this week? Because I know if I want to live the life that I want to live, which is I don't work on Saturday and Sunday, I basically have 5 days to acquire two properties and to sell two properties. That's our company goal. It's not my responsibility solely. I have a team behind me, but I want to know what are we doing. And so for the listener there that said, you know, you need more of that, absolutely. I'm a huge advocate for setting those goals and making sure that you're keeping them in your forefront. I think about our goals all day, every day. I mean, you know, when I have those moments where I want to relax you know, don't pay attention so much to the business, because as entrepreneurs, you can definitely do that. You can get lackadaisical, especially if you're successful. You have to keep those goals in front of you. So that's just my little rant for this episode.
I think it's the most important part. Like, I think it's the missing piece to everybody's business. Like the part, you know, when I first listened to it, I always had goals. I just didn't, and I always paid attention to my goals. Like, right. Like I could do an entire, like, I think I'm going to start my own podcast. It's going to be Roughneck Real Estate, but it's just going to be mindset. Like, it's going to be complete. I don't give a shit about strategy. Strategy is great. Like, it don't matter if you're flipping houses, wholesaling, buying commercial properties or whatever. The common denominator on all of that is your belief in yourself, what you're consuming every day, what you're listening to, who you're letting in your circle. All of those things matter tremendously, and that's the part that, you know, this morning I jump on a Facebook status, and I notice somebody, like my cousin, like basically he's like my cousin, we grew up together. I notice he commented on it, and I'm thinking, man, I've been seeing him post lately. So I click on it, and he's deleted me off of Facebook, right? And the reason why he's deleted me off of Facebook is because of the success that I'm having. In his mind, it's not, I mean, I live in a damn RV. You know what I mean? It's like, bro, if we're measuring success, you're driving the nice car, you're living in the nice house, you've got the appearance, right? But what he can't stand is that we're growing. You know what I mean? We're on to bigger and better things. But I'm not holding that against him. I'm not preaching at him. Hell, I'm not even talking to him. I ain't spoke 8 words to him since, you know, he tried to start a business and failed. Like, you know, I never even. I gave him business when he was in business. So I think, you know, mindset, like growing and outgrowing people and stuff like that, it's hard. Like, it is hard. It is hard to look at your circle of friends that have been there since, you know, whatever, and realize that they're never going to quit playing Xbox. You know what I mean? And that if I keep hanging out with this guy that plays Xbox all day, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fucking play Xbox all day. You know what I mean?
What's like, that saying? Like, you're the average of the 5 people that you hang around?
5 people you hang out with most.
Right.
And you see, like, the part, at least from my side of things in my life, like, you know, I've got Emery, which y'all have seen her briefly here. I've got Emery with me pretty much every day. So when we go look at properties and stuff like that, like, there's certain times when I can't hit it at the level that I want because I'm being a dad. And I don't hold that against her, and I don't hold that against me. Like, that's what I love about this business. If I was just going to work solely for the money, I'd go back to work in the oil field. You know what I mean? That's not – I'm not in this for the money. I'm in this because – when I die, like right now, walk out the door or get hit by a bus, the rent's still due. Emery's going to get a college education. You know, the people that are left behind to care for her, and they're going to have the means to do it. The income's still going to be there. Also, as I've been doing this, the people that you attract, right? So, like, through putting all this out there, you attract some really, you know, strong people. But also your friends reach out to you and say, hey, man, I would really like to get my passive income up to a point where my wife can quit her job. Well, how much money does your wife make? $5,000 a month. Are you comfortable with $600,000 of debt? You know what I mean? Like, I have a roadmap for that person that wants to invest very passively. I just want my wife to be able to quit her job so she can stay at home with our kids. Very simple goal, right? Well, I can help you get there. You know what I mean? I can wholesale you some houses. We can sell them on refinance, wrap that mortgage, and you'll have pure passive income. But here are the realities of it. Here's how much reserves you're going to need. Here's why you're going to need the reserves. I have that roadmap now because I failed enough at it to know exactly what it takes. Look, I can break down owner finance all day long, but that is the vehicle for that person. You know what I mean? RJ, you're in a different place in investing. You know what I mean? We talked about commercial property yesterday, $600,000, making the offer. The dynamics of making that offer, what the needs are. we have a completely different conversation there, right? But you're still in my circle. You know what I mean? Like, you're still right. in my circle, but we don't – I mean, we went to the game the other day, the Stars game. Yeah, you invited me up for that, and I love that. Like, that's an experience that you know, I won't get, but the entire time I'm there, I'm just – hammering real estate in the back, like, what are we going to buy? What are we going to do? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, there's a hockey game going on over here, bro. Yeah, man, it's really awesome. Like, let me know when there's a fight. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, it almost goes to overtime, or it did. It went to overtime, you know, and then I'm, like, watching overtime. But, you know, for the first however many quarters of it or whatever it is, how many periods, I'm in the back just hammering real estate with strangers. You know what I mean? So it's what you put out, you'll get back. I promise you that. Yep. Like, what you put into the world, you'll get back tenfold. And with that, you're going to scare off a lot of those average people. You know what I mean? A lot of people that I used to kick it with and drink with and, you know, go to the bars and chase women with and stuff like that, they're not a part of my life. You know, they're not, you know, maybe we're on a group text together or something like that. But when we hang out, you know, I'm not as entertained as I am when I'm hanging out with my new friend, RJ. You know what I mean? They might be talking about the scallywag from last weekend. The scallywag from last weekend don't mean nothing to me anymore. We last weekend scallywags enough. You know what I mean? So it's growing it keeps life so interesting. I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to do it. You know what I mean? I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to reach and set another goal and then also not apply that pressure to themselves. You know, I love Gary Vee because of what he says. You know what I mean? Control what you can control. Like the stuff that's out of it, you know, I don't take it personal. Like, so, yeah, that's, you know, my rant on mindset, I can go all day on it. And that's why I love talking to the new guys. The new investors are my absolute favorite because it's like their energy. I'm an energy vampire when it comes to that. Like, I'm feeding off their energy. You know what I mean? They're inspiring me to do better to help them along in their career. You know what I mean? You go sit down with somebody like Jason Witherspoon, you know, his family invites me over. I have dinner. And we're just hammering marketing in his garage. You know what I mean? That's my Friday night. And his kids are playing. You know, of course, I'm missing Emery because I didn't have her there. She's with her mom. But, you know, it's that new relationship. And it's looking at somebody like Witherspoon and saying, look, bro, I remember when I was there. I remember what I needed. How can I help you? You know what I mean? You can build the system. I've got $7,000 on the sideline waiting for this marketing. Like, so you don't have the money, but you got the time. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna launch some marketing. We're gonna launch it this week, and you're gonna get to chase these leads. And I don't care if you strike out on every lead. I don't care if that $7,000 would have been better used as a campfire, as long as you learn during the process. Because it's those misses, it's those failures that stick with you. It's those lessons that you'll actually carry. I can sit here and tell you how to do it on a podcast all day long, but until you go out there and fail enough, you're not gonna make it. You know what I mean? You've got to really try. So, I went all over the place there. That's my. I'm actually hiring a coach to get my speaking, like, focused. So,
what's funny with you bringing up Jason is, I met him at a meetup in Fort Worth right when he was getting started, and. You know, we all had to introduce ourselves, and we had to basically tell people what we were doing, but also ask what we wanted to receive from the group. And he was basically like, I'm just here to soak up as much information as possible. I want to get into wholesaling. And, you know, afterwards, he's kind of over there by himself, and I could tell, like, he was a little bit uncomfortable, didn't really know what to do. And, you know, he kind of walked up to me and introduced himself and said, hey, man, it's amazing what you've been able to do with wholesaling. I'd love to learn more from you. And I just remember telling him, I was like, man, you're in a great real estate market in a community. Like, Dallas-Fort Worth and the surrounding areas, there really is like a community here where we're all willing to help each other out to a level that, and I work in a lot of different markets. It's not really like that in some of these other markets. It is pretty unique to DFW. And it was funny because Jason then went and he was actually thanking you on Roughneck to Real Estate about something. And I commented on there and he brought that up. And it was funny because he thought I wouldn't remember that. But I did remember that moment because I could see it in his eyes and his face, man. Like, that meant something to him, and it, like, inspired him. It almost kind of gave him hope, like, okay, there's people out there that help me. And you're one of those guys that stepped up and really helped him out and get started. And I love that. I love that mindset that you have. And like you said, that's truly the abundance mindset that you have. The fact that you are willing to pay for marketing and let him go out there and run those leads, and you could really care less, but you're giving him an opportunity. And those opportunities that you're opening up to him are going to come back to you tenfold, and he's going to be a huge advocate for you.
Well, but see, Jason's going to go out and find a mobile home park that's got $600,000 in equity. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what he's going to do. That's the direction he's going to go. Like, that $7,000 in marketing that we're going to put forward will probably pay for itself 100 times over. You know what I mean? Because it's going to pay for itself 100 times over for Jason right now for his feeding his own family. He's going to go out and make probably $20,000, $30,000 off that $7,000 marketing. We'll get our $7,000 back, but he's going to go out and make all that. Not only that, the education he's going to get from having that opportunity is going to carry him forward. But I think it's, the reason why, I think people are like, oh, why would, this and that. Jason was not, like, he was persistent in talking, in the places that you talk. Like, you talk on the internet in public, right? That's where you talk. You don't go into somebody's DMs and say, hey, stranger danger, let me soak up all this time with this special attention. You know what I mean? If you talk to somebody, talk to them on a forum in public where now it's an entire conversation out in the open where everybody can soak up the value of that conversation, because I don't have time to answer every direct message about some deal in BFE that I get every day. I want to, I just don't have the time. Like, I have to allocate my time accordingly. So I can't do that. But if you ask me on a forum, you know what I mean? In a forum, that DFW investment group, any investment group, if we're talking, I'll always come back to it, because I know how much I learned from the comments sections of a million different threads, right? So with Jason, he would always talk in an appropriate place. And one day he made a comment. He said, and it cracked me up that somebody had asked what everybody was doing in there in the Roughneck Real Estate. And he said, I'm just an old broke redneck. We kind of end up congregating together. And I thought to myself, hey, you know what I mean? Like, that is correct. Like, Jason is right. And then as I learn more about his situation, it's like, look, I don't have time to chase single family houses. Like, I love meeting with sellers and single family houses and everything else, but I'm building 3 mobile home parks right now. You know what I mean? It's like, it's great to have that time, but I don't have that time. But I need, Jason needs wholesale deals, right? I need owner finance leads. I need them for the other buddy that's trying to get his wife to quit her job. You know what I mean? I can buy those leads from Jason. I can pay him wholesale fees. So when we got to sitting down and talking, I'm like, look, man, my marketing budget, you spend a lot of money on marketing. We spend a lot of money on marketing. I can no longer even market because I don't have time to answer my phone when the leads come in. I got 170 people I haven't called back, So as I talk to him, I'm like, let's set something up that works for both of us. So we're tweaking out a marketing system, and we're going to put it out. And, Jason's going to make money. We're going to make money. Kyle Garner's going to handle the east side. And everybody, like RJ, you're in, because I layered it out for them. They're going to go look at these leads, and then they're going to call these big wholesalers. You don't have a buyer's list. You don't have one, okay? You are splitting deals. You have to move these deals. RJ knows how to move the deals, what it's worth. Going to get in a real estate agent, somebody like you, somebody like Jason McDougal, somebody that has a buyer's list that can execute it and get it all the way across the line, because that's what Jason needs right now. Jason doesn't need to try to form an email, and get a blast. He needs to learn how to do that from you. You know what I mean? He needs to learn how to build a buyer's list. He's like, man, my buyer's list is 700 strong. How many houses has your buyer's list bought? You know what I mean? How many investors do you have in your pocket? Because if you can't sell it within your immediate circle, you need to go to these guys that are blasting it out and getting the deal done. So you need money, bro. That's what you need. So that's what we're
Well, and I say this all the time about buyer's lists. So if you're a new wholesaler, pay attention. I have a huge buyer's list. It's like DFW. It's like 42,000 or something. It's goofy. I've never once sold a property to more than one person. Doesn't matter how big it is. It just matters how often those people are willing to buy from you. And I've talked to wholesalers before that said my buyers list is five people, and I just alternate. Boom, 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 boom. One after another, and it's five people. So it's all the most important thing is not how big it is. It's really just about the quality and the people that you know. Establish relationships with those buyers. Find out the criteria that they have and go find the deals for them specifically. That's my advice to wholesalers. Another thing that you were talking about there was when Jason's going out and he's running these leads and then he's going to come across those bigger deals. For newer people, go out there and find people like Corey or myself or Austin Good or Jawad or there's too many people to name, but people that are willing to do those larger projects, because this goes back to mindset. I was afraid to do the larger projects when I got started because I thought I had to do them. But there was other people out there that if I had brought them the deal, they would have brought me on as a minority partner or at least bought the property from me. But I was scared, so I wanted to go out and get the $78,000 wholesale flip in Fort Worth compared to trying to go out and get a mobile home park with $600,000 equity like you're talking about. It was all just a mindset thing. I was holding myself back. I felt like I needed to go do $278,000 houses in Fort Worth before I could go do the $600,000 equity mobile home park. That was just dumbassery on my part. I was holding myself back. So don't hold yourself back. And real quick, I just want to throw this out there again. I've seen it a couple times pop up on my phone while I'm doing the Facebook Live. If you're not a part of Roughneck to Real Estate, please go join or ask to join. I've seen a couple of people that that have been watching have already requested to join. It's a great group. It's one of the best in DFW, in my opinion. It's actually probably the most interactive group that I've seen. Anytime I post on there, I see people, they comment, they like, they share it. They want to be involved in what you're talking about. So love the group. Thank you for creating that for us, Corey. And again, like I said, I said it about 45 minutes ago, but I do need to wrap this up because at some point in time, I have to put this on iTunes. But I appreciate everything that you shared with us. And I'm definitely going to have to bring you on again. I'm thinking about doing some roundtable discussions where we bring on like three or four people and specifically dive into topics that the listeners want to talk about. And obviously, with your background in owner financing and mobile home parks, you bring a whole new dynamic. So I appreciate everything that you shared today, man.
Oh, no, it's no problem. And I hope this cleans up good. If it doesn't, I'm going to get some headphones and we'll come back and we'll do it again. But yeah, look, mindset is everything. I can dive into details all day long. If you don't believe in yourself, ain't nobody else going to believe in you. So, just got to tell yourself you can and go out there and take action and back it up and just do what you say you're going to do. And if you can't do it, you know what I mean? If you run into a wall or you hit a hurdle, just reach out. You know what I mean? Just call. That's all you got to do.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks so much for listening to The Titanium Vault with your host, RJ Bates III. For more info and to stay up to date, visit www.podcast.thetitaniumvault.com and on facebook.com/thetitaniumvault. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review, and we'll catch you next time on The Titanium Vault.